Well, welcome back to our program, Fair Hope Hospice Presents. My wonderful guest today, Rick Schneider, our Community Education Coordinator. Welcome back, Rick.
I didn't expect that wonderful.
I know. I'm just, you know, just trying to be nice to him
looking
today.
Around. Who, where, what?
Well, I noticed on our last segment, here we are, you know, talking about the Pickering House and, you know, coming to visit. And, of course, you know, he threw us in the soup and the cookies, you know. So he's always thinking, that's good.
Yeah, when I give tours, you know, we talk, Pat does most of our tours now. Initially I did because she had other duties. And we usually go straight to the kitchen first, and I'd show them the chapel, then the patient. We usually go to the kitchen first. You know,
yeah, see, when I give tours, I usually go on the patient side first. So I'll have to remember that.
Well, see, you have a nurse background.
That's right. I got the nurse background.
I have an eating background. So I just, but, you know, I've told a story before. When I was getting married, we had the night before the wedding, the wedding party gathered at my future in-law's home.
Uh-huh.
And the best man was there, and there must have been 50 people in that house, and he had never been there. He was from Dayton, and this was in Lancaster. And he went right through the living room, down through the dining room, the kitchen, down the hall, straight in and talked to the wife, or talked to my future mother-in-law because she was fixing dinner. And I learned that. He goes, I always go for the cook first.
Yep, see, there you
go. It's a survival technique.
It's a survival technique, and it works for you.
It does very well.
He gets invited to dinner a lot.
Yeah, I can't remember who they were, but I'll be there.
Well, we did share some stats, but I'm just amazed. Some of the other stats that I did realize that over 50% of the patients that we take care of are cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a lot of patients with heart disease and lung disease. And then, you know, of course, dementia and things. But it was amazing because when I first started in hospice with Fair Hope Hospice almost 15 years ago, I mean, I think like 80-90% of our patients were cancer. Now we're down to like 51%. So it's amazing to see how that's changed over the years. Half the patients are men, half women, just about.
I think mostly women call it in.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Men have an image to uphold.
Yeah.
You know, and I was talking to our intake nurse, and she said most of the people who call in to make that first call to inquire about hospice or women between 40 and 55. It's not a scientific, but she says that's...
Yeah, that's true. I remember when I used to take all the phone calls. I think that's true. And really, even with just the general hospice care, most of the time it's women calling in.
Yeah. It's. I know the problems I've had, I usually crawl into the doctor, you know, on one leg and, you know, no food. She goes, what's wrong with you? I was going to take care of myself, you know. That's kind of the way we do it.
I was going to do it. I was going to get to it when I got done with everything else
I was busy,
had to do.
Yeah. But, you know, hospice has always been associated with cancer. And I think when the hospice movement first became prevalent, cancer was such an obvious illness for that type.
Absolutely.
More or less followed a progression. It was pretty much accepted as incurable, certain cancers where hospice developed, and it's held that image.
Sure.
But absolutely not anymore. It's 50%. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. But, you know, it's just kind of good to look back and see some of the changes and kind of where things are going, where we've been. You know, the other thing that we do, and I'm going to have Pam Metzel on our program, because she is our new Quality Assurance Performance Improvement Coordinator. But what that means is we really look at quality. We look at, you know, how we can improve our program all the time than the services we offer. And one of the things we do is surveys.
Mm-hmm.
And we have surveys of our patients and families while the patient's on hospice. And then once the patient dies, we do a very extensive survey with the families.
Oh.
And I don't remember. It's probably 8 to 10 pages long. It's pretty extensive. And what we do is we gather these statistics, and then we can actually compare ourselves nationally to other hospices.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just really pleased, and I did share some of this with our Board of Trustees. The one question that really stands out in my mind that I feel is really important is that would you refer others to hospice? And we had 100% said yes.
Holy smokes.
I mean, so if you think about, you know, getting a survey, you know, this huge survey and you're filling it out, but that 100% of the folks we serve would refer us to someone else shows me beyond, I know we always have areas to improve, but that shows me that overall people are very happy with what we're able to do to provide care for them.
Oh, yeah.
And that's our goal, is to make this, you know, journey for people comfortable and to help them achieve their goals and what they need to do. And so, you know, that just really warmed my heart to see that survey result.
Oh, yeah. And you figure a lot of those people answering that survey really aren't in the best frame of mind. They aren't
absolutely
in a positive frame of mind. And to be 100% positive thinking of hospice is just, that just says everything right there.
Right. And the other one was, you know, was your pain managed, you know, effectively to mm-hmm. your acceptable level? We scored 97% there. And I think nationally in Ohio was like 60%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we are way above the national average. I mean, yeah, ideally we'd be 100%, but 97.5% is what we scored, which is almost as good as you can get. You're going to always have something that you're trying to achieve that's not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because we're not in a perfect world. But we do everything we can to try to, you know, minimize pain and suffering. And I was just thrilled to see that result as well.
Because pain really is like a headache. You can't see it. I mean, sometimes you can see the physical, the cringing or whatever. But some people don't complain about pain even though they're in it. I'm not one of them. I scream all the time. No doubt there. But people sometimes withhold information. And then when the pain gets a hold of you, that breakthrough takes a long time to get back and catch up to pain. So it is a very hard thing to get 100% rating. Mm-hmm. But to be in the 90% is just phenomenal.
Yeah, 97 compared to national even. It was really great. So, you know, I think we need to congratulate our hospice staff and our team and our physicians that work for us as well as our community. You know, there's times where people look at pain management in different aspects. Some people don't want to be addicted, you know, mm-hmm. because that's what they've always heard. Physicians, you know, have in the past been reluctant to order pain medicine, you know, chronically.
Yeah.
For some patients, you know, because of abuse and things like that. But our physicians in this community and, of course, the physicians that work for us have really stepped up to the plate. They've increased their knowledge. They feel very comfortable making these patients comfortable because we couldn't, as nurses, we couldn't provide the medicines without the physician orders.
True, yeah.
So, I mean, they have the knowledge and the care and the compassion to make these patients comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
To get a percentage, you know, like that on a survey, you know that these people are being treated by their physicians.
Oh, yeah, and we think things through. You know, we ask people, okay, certain illnesses or certain medications may be addictive, but if the person obviously has a short lifespan, addiction doesn't enter into it at all.
Right.
You know, maybe you have to watch your right. Family members might be wanting the pain pills or something, but it's, you know, the issue is controlling the pain and comforting a patient is bottom line.
Right.
Whether it's comforting spiritually, physically, or mentally, you know, emotionally, we comfort. And I think that's one of the reasons we do have that high approval rate is because we find out what needs to be comforted and we comfort it. Not just medicine, not just family, not right. just one or everything.
Right.
And it's the whole package. So
absolutely. I mean, one of the things we did this year, we hired two more contingent or, you know, chaplains that work, you know, just on a as needed basis. I mean, they work, mm-hmm. A little bit during the week and on the weekends to help our spiritual care coordinator, Carl Hartman, out during the week. But that is really added, too, to be able to look at, like you said, the spiritual aspects of our patients.
Oh, well, even when I started, Carl was contingent, basically,
yeah.
10, 12 years
ago. He was part-time, yeah, he was.
And now he's way over full-time, plus two contingents.
Yeah.
But that does show that people are, there is a need for spiritual discussions.
Right.
And some clergy may not be comfortable in certain situations. To explain what's happening.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you look at, if you think about your own life, well, which we all reflect on that, and you think about, you know, what needs you might have. I mean, we're all looking at, you know, where do we come from? Where are we going when we die?
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, having that spiritual component is really important to our care. And actually respecting everyone's spirituality, you know, their religious preferences and their cultural preferences mm-hmm. is really important. And so we have all of our spiritual care coordinators trained in those special areas, as well as our nurses and our social workers and our aides and volunteers.
Everybody.
But it's real important because we're here to really meet their needs and help them through. Because there's times where, you know, if spiritually someone's really suffering, it can impact their entire body and their comfort.
And sometimes they're afraid to tell the clergy,
mm-hmm.
their pastor, because they think they might get in trouble. You know, it sounds silly, but that's the way it is. As a patient care volunteer, I had a patient one time. He goes, you know, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. Well, I guess I'm like that too.
I remember that.
Yeah. He says, I'm always thinking about me. What should I do? And I try to get out of myself. But with this illness,
he
starts thinking about all his mistakes in his past. And mm-hmm. those really ride heavy on people, and they might not verbalize to folks. But the, you know, the chaplain and our staff, our, we have a spiritual staff. You really have to be in this business. They can pick up on those little subtle fears.
Right.
So,
and I think, you know, when you look at that team approach, where you're looking at the physical, you know, with our nurses, our aides, our doctors, you know, you look at the psychosocial with our social workers, and then the spiritual aspects, you can really look. We look at the whole person. The person isn't a disease, a cancer, you know, that. We are looking at the person themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, you know, what they've done in their lives and, you know, who they are. And that's what we're really working with and treating. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, physically, you know, taking care of someone.
Well, I'm in team on Tuesday mornings. We more or less roundtable each patient. And I guess since I watched Patch Adams years ago where he became interested in the patient's name where everything was a number in an illness.
Yeah.
You know, the doctor saying patient room 605. Well, Patch Adams said, what's their name? He goes, well, I don't know. You know, it, when I listen to us in team, it is nothing but names and what does the family, what does the wife think? Is the mom involved? And hardly anything. I mean, we do take care of the illness and the medicine, but it's so much more with names and people and feelings and emotions. It's just, it's an amazing amazing place. I'm very glad to be there
I
on this side
that.
Of the fence. But believe I would definitely, if the time comes, I would sign up for hospice.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, that's what we're here for, Rick, to take care of our friends and families mm-hmm. and, you know, our neighbors and, you know, the people in this community.
Of course, so. Working in the Pickering House, I might sign up early and just get room 12 in the back and get the pictures up on the wall.
You know, and that is one of the things I think the hardest thing to do is really is to discharge patients. I mean, to release them to home sometimes because they do, you know, enjoy the care and we're able to provide that holistic
they
care to the families.
They truly do not want to leave. In fact, you know, the squad members, a lot of times people go back home to their nursing home in an ambulance, you know, a non-emergency ambulance, but they don't want to go. And the squad members say, they're quiet when they come in, or they want to stay. They don't want us to take them home. They didn't want to go. Now they don't want to leave.
That's it. Well, come out and visit us, and you can see what we're talking about. And I do want to thank Rick for being with me today. And I want to thank you for listening. And remember, celebrate life.